Okay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Matej Praprotnik. I'm a senior researcher at the National Institute of Chemistry in Ljubljana. And before that, I was S-Kammer and also postdoc with Kurt and in Mainz. And perhaps, okay, I will have a different talk than Kammer, so I will not go into details of any method that I show. And actually, the reason is simple, because the results that I wanted to present here are still not there yet. So they're running, and let's wait perhaps a week or two, and then perhaps I can show you some results. So, and actually, what I actually wanted to focus then on is more or less the work that I did in my relatively short career. I'm not a Max Planck director, so let's see. I will just show. Perhaps I want to say I'm young, but that's also not true, because recently what I noticed here that when you go to when I go to the bar, they no longer ask me whether I'm 21, so might be something to do that I'm also young anymore. So what I actually wanted to show you, the methods that I was developing that are connected to, let's say, more or less to bridging length and time scales. And the way I wanted to actually make it, to draw a red line between them. So sometimes it would be thick, sometimes thin. But I wanted to present how I actually, I wanted to point out a few things that might be of interest and trigger some considerations. And actually, I want to show also my center of mass, typical center of mass, because I'm quite moving around, but usually I find myself there in Slovenia, and I show that usually I don't do that. But here, I came here, and people are extremely nice, and they talk to you, and usually they ask where you come from, because they can see that I'm not American. And then I say Slovenia, and so before that, it was usually like that I had to explain what Slovenia actually is, perhaps some, I don't know what. Now they are really, okay, I'm Slovenia, okay, fine. But then they usually put me to the Russia, so I'm always in Russia. So it started with my land native. And yeah, okay, it's not so far away. If you look from the California, perhaps you do some coarse graining, we are in Russia. But we are mostly close to Italy and Austria. So the first thing, what I will start doing in Mainz is actually this multiscale modeling, and actually more precisely adaptive resolution. And this is a typical phase diagram of length and time scale and methods that are used in different contexts. And here I just plot basically address. And now, as you already heard during this workshop, it was extended to quantum. We started actually here connecting atomistic and all-atom descriptions. And we also extended it to particle-based and so to continuum descriptions. So I was not involved in quantum, and I just admire nice results here, and they were really already presented. I think also the middle part was also already extensively presented. Perhaps the continuum part was not presented, and I wanted to show some new results, but I'm still waiting for them. So I will just slide across and just make a few points that might be of interest, because I heard some discussion here. So one of these is just the starting slide, actually. What we do is actually, in the core, we're changing the resolution on the fly. And by doing so, we change the number of degrees of freedom of molecules. So if you take this tetrahedral-like molecule, it has 12 degrees of freedom, 3 translational, 3 rotational, and 6 vibrational, while the coarse grain one has only 3 translational degrees of freedom and no orientation in space. And what we are doing, we want to do, is actually to change from left to right on the fly during the MD simulation. And we achieve that, and I will come back to this slide because it's important, with a drag scheme that we already saw many times. So this is this force linear interpolation between atomistic and coarse grain forces. What I want to point out here is only two facts. First of all, that it's not conservative, so there doesn't exist Hamiltonian, and we discussed about that on several occasions already during this workshop. And the second one, that it actually satisfies the third Newton law. So, and this actually is important. Basically, these two points I want to make up, because when you couple MD with continuum, so this is continuum descriptions, where we are solving, we are describing the dynamics of the liquid with the Navier-Stokes, and this is the particle system where we actually discuss the liquid on a particle-based, with the particle-based description using address, actually. So the reason why we did that is, of course, that we wanted to extend the length space to even larger ones, so to cover flows which are not actually, which are very difficult to cover with only particle methods. So, but using address, now that I said that there is no Hamiltonian and that there is, but that there is certain law. So the Third law actually is crucial for these kind of things, because actually guarantees that we are conserving linear momentum, which is important for studying of hydrodynamics, that you have a proper momentum to the liquid. While that here that we don't have a Hamiltonian, I don't think it's so important, because if you couple it to Navier-Stokes, no? So if you look more vaguely, Navier-Stokes is also a force equation on a mesoscopic scale, so we are matching basically dynamics on the mesoscopic and atomistic scale with forces. It doesn't also doesn't have a Hamiltonian, so if we do, we are studying flows, then this point that there is no Hamiltonian address, I don't think it plays a major role, but more crucial fact is that we are satisfying the Third law.
Well, if you trap off dissipation in Navier-Stokes, it does have a Hamiltonian.
Yeah, but we don't do it. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Okay, this is actually our setup for the liquid that I showed. So we are using the finite volume scheme here, only in one direction. And in between we have this particle region. And in our case, we have also, so as in the case of address, where you go from coarse grain to all atom, the difficult thing is not to go from all atom to coarse grain, because you throw away information. The difficult thing is to go from coarse grain to all atom. The similar thing happens here, so it's easy to go from all atom, so from the particle-based description to the continuum one, but the difficult part is actually how to go from the continuum to all atom. And we do here via the flux exchange scheme, which was actually developed by Rafa there. And we couple that so we combine it with the address scheme in such a way that, so I said that the difficult part is how to go from the continuum description to the particle basis, and this happens actually in this buffer cell, as we call it, where we actually match the fluxes from both sides, and in such a way that then, of course, we have to conserve the momentum and mass flux, we have to insert particles into a dense liquid, and that's one of the reasons why we actually chose to do a combined address with this particle MD schemes. So because actually it's very difficult to insert a complex molecule into a dense liquid. What we have to do all the time here in this coupling hybrid scheme. And so our idea was that okay if I insert a coarse grain particle which have much softer interaction, this should be much easier. And then we let it using address grow into full atomistic particle here in the end region. So this is the reason why we combine, why we actually use the address here. And in this particular setup, so you can play around where you put now coarse grain, explicit, and hybrid regions. In this particular setup, the whole buffer is only composed of coarse grain molecules. So we insert the molecules here, and they're coarse grain. So this is what actually we want. But in principle, we could also use the hybrid region here inside the buffer. And then our ND region would be completely composed of explicit molecules. So this is also actually one of the tricks how you get around the problem of not having a Hamiltonian, because then you would have this transition regime here with not a prime Hamiltonian actually in this buffer cell, and then our explicit region would be fully atomistic. So then you would have an open system composed of all atom molecules. So this is also one of the points which I want to make. What we did is actually, I will not show here this in detail, but let's say you can then simulate different flows. Here is just a representation of the wet flow, and we actually regained the theoretical description. We also extended that to, for example, a triple scale simulation of liquid water, and it works in the same way. So actually we are going here to the region of interest, which should be described in the atomistic fashion, and then further away, as we move further away from this region of interest, the resolution gradually decreases. So actually go to coarse grain, description with one side potential similar that just Cameron just presented. And then the region then here, the system then described with the Stokes, and of course this is much cheaper, so this is 100 times, let's say approximately 100 times cheaper than MD. So that's the idea of doing that. So here I also present a different example with a different kind of method. So so far we applied, so we combined the address scheme with the hybrid scheme of Alpha, which is based on flux exchange. So we are exchanging the fluxes. So the flux description from continuum and all atom region. This is another method. It's actually based on original version. Original version was based on state coupling. So you have an overlap region here, where the MD and continuum description are both valid. And then here, in these two slabs, you impose the continuum so that the densities and velocities of continuum are the same as the averages of MD description inside of these boxes. But here you impose actually the continuum to the MD, while here you impose the boundary condition from MD to continuum. And we have and one step in between to the system has where we don't do anything, so the system has time to relax. And actually in this way, one can basically, the idea was here, but this is not actually a state coupling anymore, because we do it in two states, neighboring slabs, so that we also gain the gradients on the mesoscopic scale. So basically.
Matteo, yeah. I'm somehow conceptually lost.
Yeah.
So far, the address scheme that I know of.
The risk has nothing to do here. So there's no address here. So here is the direct coupling of atomistic description in continuum. Because actually, what I didn't say before is that all these hybrid particle-based and continuum methods were so far applied to, let's say, system like Lennard-Jones or water, but not to more complicated molecules.
Well, let's look at what you had like two slides before, the coed flow of water. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So far, all I knew was that you try to do equilibrium, you have to match a bunch of parameters, event. Mm-hmm. You might need some like forces to keep things. What I'm worried now is how do you do dynamics? I mean, yes. There's just no reason why the fusion constants would be the same.
And yeah. So why do all those regions have the same viscosity?
Yeah, because we actually matched it. I didn't want to rematch it with the thermostat, but it's not so. We match it with our. I didn't want to go into that detail, but we have this transverse DPD thermostat where we can match two different couplings. And of course, if you don't do anything, the dynamics of coarse grain water or whatever model is much faster. And here we introduce via the thermostat this missing viscosity.
That also means slowing down your.
Yeah, we actually slow down. We actually slow down the coarse grain dynamics. So it would be cool if you could actually speed up the atomistic. Because okay, I didn't make this point because I thought that it's already clear. So I said that I will not go into the details of this, but. Yes, what we do here is actually, since you have two different kind of models in one box, you have to have the same dynamics as well. And in our approach, we are doing that. So the structure is met by, I don't know, so the derivation of effective potential. But there you completely lose the control over the dynamics. And then we, posteriori, then we tweak the dynamics such with this thermostat that we get the same dynamics all over the box.
I assume that's also a reason why you, as quickly as possible, want to go to continuum without a big coarse grain region, which is just.
Basically that's one of the reasons. And actually, we want to do the coarse graining. So in this respect, actually, address plays only on a tool how to insert molecules, if you want to see it like that. So to facilitate the insertion of the molecules into a dense liquid. And the idea is actually that, so as I said, if you don't use address, you can basically insert molecular liquids like the Lennard-Jones or water, but you cannot go above. So now what we want to have is actually that you can then insert also more complex liquids, and you need something to facilitate that. And the idea is that you use address for that. Okay, but here, perhaps I didn't mention because I think that this is another type of method that I'm using, that I'm showing here.
And what you also probably wanted to say is that this coarse grain.
Why don't you go for that?
No,
it's okay, it's fine.
I think the coarse grain layer was important, you could not use address to couple atomistic directly to continuum?
That you no, this then wouldn't play any role. Why would you need address there?
Yeah, or whatever. I mean, whatever.
Here you don't. For example, here we couple continuum with atomistic description without any address because you don't need it in principle for water.
But if you're playing with much bigger molecules than water.
If you're playing with much bigger molecules, then you use address.
Then it's a mess. Because what address does is it simplifies the structure of the molecule.
That's the idea. So we have a soft effective potential, and then it's easier to insert.
It becomes cross-grained also.
So you just do a random insertion here of your waters and see if they fit.
So here, not even that, because here is a closed system. So you always have the molecule. So this is it's a different material that I didn't really want
to. Yeah, but in the other example.
But in the other examples, you insert the molecules according to the mass flux that is prescribed by the continuum.
Yeah. Can I ask, how do you deal with the long-range electrostatics across the depth?
So here, in all these examples with water, we use the reaction field.
Okay, so you have the reaction field in the continuum part.
Exactly. So it's not perhaps the ideal thing, but at the moment,
it's quite difficult.
So the idea here, for example, in this particular case was that if you do the flow past molecules, you don't know the boundary conditions. So the boundary conditions are not no slip boundary conditions; they are partial slip. And actually, why we need the atomistic description around the molecule is to gain the boundary condition for the flow. So this is the other philosophy than in the other case, where perhaps so you can study with these hybrids two different cases. So you can think that the particle-based region, how the particle-based region affects the flow, which is this case. So you get the boundary condition for the flow out. You can also ask yourself a different question, how the flow affects the atomistic region, which was basically more or less the previous example. Okay, well, that would be a previous example. If you had something here and then you would drive the flow, how this flow actually affects the micro properties there. So there are two different ways of doing that. And what I wanted to say here that at the end, so there were all a long time discussion what is better now, the state coupling or the flux exchange. Actually, at the end, we also here reached the flux exchange, basically, on the more mesoscopic level. Because with the gradients, actually, we represent, here perhaps. So we get the flux. We have the pressure, we have the velocities by state coupling, and then we get this stress tensor via the gradients, which involves the gradients of velocities. We gain them from the two different layers separating, so to actually constrain the velocities in the two neighboring layers of the cell. And what I want to point out also here is that this is actually the first simulation with 3D coupling. So we have here a 3D sphere. So far we did it only in one way. And this, of course, actually matters because the 2D and 3D examples can be different in these areas. So, what I want to switch now is actually basically
But now you're going back again.
Yes, because I want to go back, because I want to get back actually to the first slide. So you will see that why I'm doing that. You have to wait a bit. So here I go back to the fractional degrees of freedom, which is actually a different way of looking at the cross graining. So here we are not looking at, so we are not using the term integrated out. We don't think about integrating out the degrees of freedom. We are thinking about turning on and off the degrees of freedom. And actually we do that via the fractional calculus, because in this transition regime we had actually non-continuous change of degrees of freedom, and we are dealing with the fractional dimension of the phase space. So in order to do that, actually this is just a equivartition function for the one quadratic degree of freedom. Okay, we actually you have to also take into account that the phase space doesn't have the integer number of degrees of freedom, and then you actually what we show is that in order to define the proper temperature in this transition regime, we actually generalize the equipartition theorem to the non-integer degrees of freedom, which is such that actually in this way of thinking, the fully turned on degree of freedom, which is fully represented, contributes kT half, like standard statistical mechanics and fully closed-grained, so turn off the degree of freedom doesn't contribute anything to the statistical average. So this is just the way actually it works. What we showed, it doesn't only work for quadratic degree of freedom, but actually what we assume here is that the degrees of freedom that are closed-grained out are actually decoupled from the closed-grained degrees of freedom, which is an approximation. And in this picture, so for the quadratic degrees of freedom, this always holds, so the temperature is well defined. And actually, what we showed also is that the pressure is also agreed.
If you don't have a quadratic degree of freedom, there's still a certain amount of energy in that degree of freedom. Is that also
a
fraction of alpha of the full one?
Yeah, so the idea here is just that to, what we are having here is not the dynamics, they're always there.
No, not dynamics. The question
what
is,
I'm
is
saying
it's not specific to a quadratic degree of freedom, or does it hold for anything I could write a Hamiltonian for?
So, no, actually, so far we showed that it holds for a specific form of what you have as an effective potential. So, Q, so for example, it's just some polynomial. It has to be a nice function. But that's why I'm saying this is still decoupled from address, actually. This is just a way of thinking of coarse grain in a different way. But it's very convenient to define a temperature there in the position.
If I don't understand, it's immediately.
Okay, so you don't understand. Sorry. So the idea is that this alpha is actually the value of the weighting function between 0 and 1. So somewhere in the set, we are somewhere in the transition regime, and we think of one step, and there you have a weighting function which has a value of alpha.
That's where we don't have Hamiltonian.
Yes.
That's what we learned.
Exactly. So now here we have a kinetic energy. And think that this is like you would coarse grain a disk which has a translational degrees of freedom and a rotational one. And now you want to coarse grain out the rotational one. You want to turn it off, let's say, in this way. And actually, this is the hybrid regime. And here is somewhere we are in between, and the weighting function is alpha. So what we are asking here is actually how much this partial degree of freedom contributes to the statistical average. So how much of what we are explicitly considering. So this is an explicit part of this degree of freedom. And the rest is actually in the implicit part. So it's like internal energy. So then what you have to consider is actually if you just the way how we set it up is you just multiply there the kinetic energy. So if you divide the kinetic energy into one part that is explicit is this one, and plus one minus alpha that is actually the coarse grain part, which is just a trivial sum. Then you have to actually take into account that there is a continuous dimension of phase space. So in this way of thinking, we don't have a when you go from a totally turn off degrees of atomistic description of a system, the coarse grain one, you don't go in one step, but you go in a continuous manner. So you go from 1 to 0. And this is somewhere in between. So in our idea was that you would do it this in a continuous way, and you have to here actually take into account that you have a fractional number of degrees of freedom. And this is now just shown for one degree of freedom, which is here, let's say rotation.
How do you get p to the alpha? Is that because you do like a free energy, you get e to the log energy raised to the alpha power, or
p? So this is our explicit kinetic energy.
Sure, that part I get. It's the next line. We have p to the alpha minus one.
Here, this is now okay. This is actually the fractional calculus. So if you would have a normal dimension of phase space, you would just get there p. dp. This would be if you have 1 degree of freedom.
Oh.
So now what we say is actually we don't have a dimension of 1, but we have something between 1 and 0. And then you use the main, so this is just a term which comes out from the fractional calculus.
It's a space-space factor.
Yeah, it's a space-space, exactly.
It's a dv alpha, but it should have been a dp theta or something, maybe?
This alpha there, it should be, perhaps it's a different theta is actually this rotational degree of freedom, and alpha is here the value of where we are. Like you can also use a different notation, but the idea is that this is, if you are in atomistic region, you would get a dp theta there. No? So And now since we don't have an integer number, so we are not fully turned, so we don't, this degree is not fully turned on, we have to use the, not the DP, but the fractional calculus. And this, so the dimension, so the dimension of phase space of partial turned on degree of freedom, then actually simple, I mean, then you get something like that. And this is the only way, because you have to think about that. If we didn't put consider this thing that the dimension of the phase space is not integer, you would have here dp, and then this alpha wouldn't matter. This would be like a force constant. You would always get k t alpha. It doesn't matter. It's just quadratic degree of freedom. You can multiply it with whatever you want, and you will get k t alpha alpha.
Well, that's not true if you do quantum mechanics. Yeah. Also, the other way. No, but the other way is to, in some pretend fashion, switch these degrees of freedom off by having a non-classical expression there. Because, I mean, that's the other way degrees of freedom disappear. Yeah. They freeze when the temperature gets low.
Okay, so this is exactly what...
You don't want to freeze them. That's exactly the point. You go from dimension 1 to 0 because you take them out. You don't cool them down. That is something.
No, this is not. This is one.
You don't have to cool them down. You could, with this, for instance, you could just turn off the moment of inertia until that degree of freedom drops out, because it's not, you know, because h bar I blah 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 is too high for the temperature. So I'm just saying there's another way of continuously connecting 0 and 1 degree of freedom, and that's by quantum mechanics.
Okay. That might be so.
Because, you know, physically that's how it happens. Physically it doesn't happen like this, but in the physical world, degrees of freedom do come and go for precisely this reason. But the excitation associated with a rotation in a molecule,
yeah, then completely drops out through, yes, this, through this.
Okay, the difference here is that, of course, our degrees of freedom, they here, they don't go away, they're there. They are just, it depends whether you explicitly consider them or not.
I understand.
Yeah, so that's why we are doing that.
But Matthew, you're telling me, like, if I'm in this region and where I have just half a degree of freedom, how would I properly do the partition function of half a degree of freedom? And you said you do like this.
Yeah.
But in the hybrid region where that happens, I do not even have a Hamiltonian, as you also told me.
So and that's why I'm showing you for kinetic energy. So this doesn't work. Yeah, if you don't have a Hamiltonian, then obviously you cannot do that. So this is now actually what we are fixing here is basically temperature. You cannot do that.
Maybe what I'm saying is, if you don't have a Hamiltonian, then why do you even worry about partition functions, which you can't do in the absence of a Hamiltonian?
Because I wanted to define the temperature right in the transition.
But you define the temperature now as some thermal average, and I do not know what that is if you don't have your...
If you would do it, I agree. So here would be, basically you would have to take slabs and you would have to send them to infinity. So it's still something that we are playing around. So I'm not saying that this is directly applies. You cannot, for example, we also don't derive the address out of that. Okay, but what I want to show is, and this is the difference, what you mentioned just now, is that this doesn't correspond to the normal mode, so that you would change the amplitude and you would freeze them out or not. So, and this brings me actually to... So far we were always discussing that we don't have a Hamiltonian, so I will go now to something that I did from Fiji, and where I was involved in MD integration. And there I also did the Hamiltonian systems. So this is actually now a Hamiltonian system, and what we want to do is actually we want to derive an ND integrator which would allow longer time steps. And this is the formal solution of the Hamiltonian Hamiltonian system. And we actually, what we did is actually as a standard way, which was very popular in the 90s, I guess, by Mark Tuckerman and the rest, we used the strength splitting or the throttle expansion, and we separate first the Hamiltonian into two parts, which actually if you separate them in E and V, you get the normal velocity integrator. But what we did is actually we split them in harmonic part, H naught is harmonic part and HR is the rest. So, and the idea is that the harmonic part is the one with higher frequencies, and actually what we know, so the harmonic part we know how to solve analytically because we are using the normal modes. So this is then if you write down the equation, you get actually something like that. So the first thing is actually giving us solving for normal modes, and this is actually the high frequency part of the Hamiltonian, and we are solving them actually analytically, and this is very similar, I guess, to path integral forms. So. And since we are solving this high frequency part analytically, we can actually, the idea is that to put the time step limit towards longer time step scales. What I want to actually, why I'm showing this is actually this thing, that these integrators have this property that basically they have to be time reversible in order to conserve energy. And that's why I'm slowly coming back. This is actually the point of the whole talk that I wanted to make. And okay, here I can show that we did achieve this time reversibility by actually propagating also the internal system in a time reversible manner. I don't want to go into the details. And the end result was that actually, this is the error in total energy, that we could simulate flexible water with time step of 3 femtosecond with the same accuracy as the standard Lee algorithm at 0.5 femtosecond. But this brings me back to this slide, and actually this is the whole point I wanted to make, that actually what we are doing here is when we go from this direction to that, this molecule doesn't have an orientation in space and actually represents many orientations of atomistic configuration. That means that if we are going left and right, and the way how we want to do it is actually that here we throw all this information away. We don't bookkeep any information about the orientation of all atom molecule. This operation here just change of resolution is not a time reversible operation. And I think that actually, in my opinion, but perhaps I'm wrong, this actually then leads to all these problems that you end up actually then with the address scheme. So if you just forget what kind of algorithm will come out, it's difficult to, so if you consider that if you want to have a Hamiltonian system and it has to be time reversible, then actually the consequence of this fact is also actually that we have a non-conservative force and non-conservative algorithm, and we need to have a thermostat and we don't have a defined Hamiltonian. So this is actually one of the ideas that perhaps open for discussion. But so in my opinion, this non-conservative, the idea that we don't have a conservative force is actually somehow connected to that this very operation in what we want to do is actually not a time reversible operation in our algorithm. And perhaps I just can show another thing, but this is not connected to
that's a fourth topic now.
Yeah, this is a fourth topic, and this is very slow, this is just an advertisement. What we did here we have enzyme kinetics, and it's very similar also to this integration. We can have different algorithms to speed up this, to solve this equation here, but this was not our intention. What we did here is actually an interface, a web server, where you can just draw the scheme, which automatically generates this set of equations and fits, and this is actually a useful tool for experimentalists when they get some data and they don't know which enzyme, which scheme for enzyme genetics based data corresponds to, and they can easily then check different kind of schemes. So basically, the idea is that, of course, in this way, one can then check all different kinds of data in a very fast way, and it's freely available at that address there. Okay, so.
Okay, thank you.